Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And good evening to you, Ben, and hi everybody.
Hi everyone indeed. Mm-hmm. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. Any comments or questions or queries you may have about on the subject of astronomy, we will do our best to entertain you, answer your questions, or whatever. But first we'll start, as usual, with what to see in the night sky, such as it is, John. With we'll get to a bit more detail, but it is the summer solstice is tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
Just before 4 p.m, to be precise.
It has quietly crept upon us. And it's suddenly going to disappear again, just as it...
It doesn't seem like that long ago we were talking about the winter solstice.
No, indeed. Now, Mercury dropping lower down into the sunrise just at the moment. And early, what sort of midweek, you might be able to try and catch it with binoculars about 30 minutes before sun up and scan just above the east-northeast horizon. The east-northeast, yes, okay. Very far lower left of Jupiter. So, Venus, very bright, -4.6. It's in Cancer at the moment. Brilliant evening star. It's in the west of the twilight into dark. It's getting lower every week. And you can watch that. You can see that, Ben. I've been watching it as we've had some good weather over the last number of weeks. And it now sets less than an hour just after full darkness. Now, full darkness in the summertime is quite late, so we're okay with that. So, in a telescope, Venus is a thick crescent, dazzling white, 29 arcseconds from pole to pole. Venus will become dramatically bigger, and the thinner crescent dropping lower until it finally lost from sight in mid to late July. So it happens quite quickly. And Mars, on the other hand, a little bit dimmer, well, in fact, a good bit dimmer, 1.7 on the scale, crossing from Cancer into Leo at the moment. It glows weakly, little to Venus's upper left, which is correct, and by a slightly shrinking distance on just a few days ago, June the 16th, and that's slipping from 5.6 to 4.1 by the 23rd, so it's dimming away. And funny enough, there was I got a call from my favourite mother-in-law, and she said the planets are going to be very close to each other for the first time for a long time. And what she means is that they'll be sort of in a line. You can watch Venus from Earth here, with Mars to the upper left at the moment. And the other planet, was it, I had it here a moment ago. I'll catch it now in a minute. But on the 17th, which was only a few days ago, there was five in a line. And you would probably need to be pretty early to see this in the morning, as a couple of them were in the early morning sunrise, so that's good. So Jupiter, it's become very bright as well, -2.2, and it's the bright star in the east just before an early dawn. Saturn, it's quite hard to see. It's very dim in Aquarius, rises by 1 a.m., and Uranus, again, magnitude +5.8. Very difficult to see. Need a pair of binoculars, a good pair of binoculars or a telescope, as you do with Neptune, magnitude 7.9. So they really are dark. And Neptune is in the Aquarius-Pisces border, and it's high in the southeast just before dawn begins. So if you want to have a mooch around the skies to see if you can see Neptune, it's 20 degrees east along the ecliptic from Saturn. So if you can manage to find Saturn, you'll get that. So the ones to watch, I think, really, Venus, Mars, you can still just about see it. Jupiter in the morning time, and they're the three really to watch for. And it's good fun to watch these, actually. Yeah,
yep.
I thoroughly enjoy it.
Thank you, John. The International Space Station, not currently visible in Irish skies. No, you might have the date when it's next appears. Yeah, not for another week or so, at least, anyway.
A little reminder for people who do like to see the International Space Station whizzing across our skies. July the 9th, I think, is the day that it comes back into our skies again. If I just confirm that for you, if I can.
Okay.
Yeah, you caught me off guard. Yes, July the 9th until July the 27th.
That's the evening skies?
That's the evening skies. Mm-hmm. We'll get to see it during the early mornings as well, the odd time too. But I'm not really into that one.
Of course, we have the sun and the moon in the sky too. In fact, we have the moon at the moment is visible above the horizon here from our vantage point here in Dublin, because it's not that long, it was a few days ago, we had the new moon. And so at the moment we only have a 7% waxing crescent moon at the moment, and it will be setting just past midnight tonight, round about just before 20 minutes past midnight tonight. And it'll be slightly increased. You'll see 8% of the face of the moon. Not that you'd notice that visually. And another 1% will be on view by the time it rises again tomorrow at 7:32 a.m. as we head towards first quarter moon. And that will be on Monday the 26th at 8:50 a.m. in the morning. Now, the sun, we mentioned it will be the summer solstice tomorrow. And what that means is that sunrise tomorrow in Dublin will be at 4:56 a.m. That's a mere 4 minutes before 5 a.m. Of course, the sky is brighter long before that. Sunrise being the time when the first limb of the disk of the sun breaches the eastern horizon, or northeastern horizon in this case. And local noon in Dublin, that is when the sun is at its highest and is due south of us, is at 1:26 p.m., which is a minute later than a week ago. Now, the sunrise, as I mentioned, is at 4:56 a.m., which is more or less the same time as it was a week ago. It's only a couple of seconds in the difference, a couple of seconds earlier. And then the sun sets tomorrow in Dublin at 9:56 p.m. That's 4 minutes before 10, and that's only 2 minutes later than a week ago. And from that time until 10:49, we'll have civil twilight. And from then until just after midnight the following morning, we'll have a nautical twilight. Will be ending then. That's just after midnight on Thursday, the 21st. And or Wednesday, the 21st, I should say. So we'll have astronomical twilight after that until the nautical twilight begins again at about 2:30 a.m. We'll have no astronomical night until the 30th. Of July. What does that mean? That means there's only a mere 2 minutes more daylight tomorrow than there was a week ago, when there'll be just another 4 seconds extra between sunrise and sunset tomorrow than there was today. And then the day after that, it will be actually minus 2 seconds or something like that.
Mark,
so,
What
that means is the time now tomorrow between sunrise and sunset is in Dublin is 17 hours, 0 minutes and 13 seconds. That's a whole 9.5 hours more than at the winter solstice, which will be coming upon us before we know it. But enjoy the summer solstice tomorrow, yeah. Just as you mentioned, I think Wednesday, tomorrow evening, Venus will be 4 degrees to the lower left of the moon. In case you don't know which one Venus is, although it's very hard to miss now, it's that bright.
No.
And on Thursday, a little marker for Mars, it's 5 degrees to the lower right of the moon. So to the lower right of the moon on Thursday evening, you'll see Mars about 5 degrees. 5 degrees being, what's about that? The width of about 2 fingers at arm's length. So fairly close. That's a good marker for you for Mars.
There you go. Now, I've been watching this over the last number of weeks. Europe's the BepiColombo Colombo spacecraft yesterday zoomed within 150 miles of Mercury in a close flyby. So I'm really looking forward to the photographs that it has taken and the images that will get back to here to Earth and then be released to ourselves, particularly. Did you see that? So the flyby was the third flyby of Mercury, and it whizzed past the planet at a super close distance of 147 miles just above the surface. That is brilliant, isn't it? And goodness knows what we're going to see when we see the pictures coming back. So the main goal of the flyby is not to take the stunning close-ups of Mercury's surface, but to slow down the probe using Mercury's gravity so that it can enter the planet's orbit in 2025. So it's going to do a bit of experimentation and pictures and all sorts of things as well.
Thank you, John, for that. If our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text on the WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And thanks to our a WhatsApp from Stevie in
Hello, Stevie.
France. Chamonix. Is that how I pronounce that correctly?
Yep. Bang on.
He wants to, he's enjoying the show. Thank you very much, Stevie. And he says, any take on that new alien lark? I'm not sure what he means. We did cover that when I was here 2 weeks ago about the, I'm not sure that's what he means. We do cover aliens and UFOs. We did talk about two weeks ago when I was here last about the U.S. Air Force are opening up their books and letting somebody have an official investigations into UFOs. They don't call them UFOs now, but UA, what are they? Unidentified flying?
Anomalies.
Anomalies, something like that. Forgotten already what they call them, but
I stumbled across on a channel or two on the satellite programs the odd time, and William Shatner is involved in the UFOs, the programs, and trying to prove this, that, and the other. But, yep, that book is still open on this one.
Yeah, they are investigating. They have a couple of hundred cases of weird phenomena, unidentified aerial phenomena. I think that's what they call them now, UAPs. But some of them are, one of the more famous ones for one of the, I don't know what you saw a few years ago, the two fighter jets tracking something or trying to.
Oh, it did, yeah.
But it was only a dot on the screen. It's not as though you saw anything definitive. I mean, that could be an electrical, and one of the little LEDs or whatever it is on the screen being funny. It's just a dot on the screen, but. Yeah.
When I see the army lights, you know, that they put up in a parachute, it just hangs around for ages, that type of thing. So,
But when I see a clear picture of ship with windows and a little green man waving out, I pay a bit more attention to it then, but not dots on electronic screens. Yeah. And when you think about all the professional astronomers who spend their days and nights looking up into the sky. And many of them have, not just the professional astronomers, but the dedicated amateur astronomers who are looking through telescopes and doing long exposures, photography.
Stacking, you name it there.
Yeah, they don't see anything.
No, not at all. They might see a few starlinks, a spoilers, evening skies.
Yeah, but I don't know of any who've been claimed to have been abducted by aliens. I, even when I was a kid, I used to read all those stories about there was always somebody claiming to be abducted by aliens and used for some certain biological testing. And they swear to it, and I'm sure they believe that's what happened to them. But anyway, we do cover aliens and UFOs and UAPs and whatever you want to call them nowadays.
Anyway, good to have you along, Mr. Stevie, and thank you for tuning our way. You're certainly the furthest listener so far this evening.
So far tonight.
If there's anybody further than that, just give us a quick shout. Now, the Chinese are back. They launched another Long March 2D carrier rocket on Thursday afternoon to send the largest...
This is the record-breaking...
41 satellites into space, setting its new national record for the most spacecraft transported on a single mission. So, local time, it blasted off at 1:30 p.m., from a service tower in the Taiyuan Satellite Launch Center in Shaanxi province, and they successfully placed 41 small remote sensing satellites into preset orbits, according to the China Aerospace Science and Technology Corporation. So it's very exciting for them as well. So they're certainly getting in on the space race, I suppose, as well. So,
thank you, John. Yes, well, it's not just the Chinese. I see the Spanish were trying to launch their own rocket too, from the south of Spain, just near the Portuguese border, from a town called, I have it there in a moment, but it was their maiden flight of their first rocket, but unfortunately they haven't been successful. They had to abort the planned launch on Saturday after the countdown ended because there was some last minute technical problem. At the launch was, as I mentioned, was in the southwestern province of Huelva. I don't know whether hopefully I got that pronunciation right. And the rocket was called Mayura 1, which is named after a breed of fighting bulls. And it was had initially been scheduled for a May 31st launch, but that was postponed due to high winds. And then on Saturday's launch was, as I said, abandoned because of a technical problem, which they're looking into, see what they can find out. But it's not, I saw a picture of this, John. It's not a huge rocket now. It's only 12 meters or 40 foot tall. But it is a small reusable rocket that will fly to the magical 100 kilometer or 62 miles above the Earth. And although that is technically speaking in outer space, the rocket is not powerful enough to reach orbit. So it's a suborbital rocket. And it was planned that Saturday's suborbital launch, that it had been slated to bring a payload with microgravity experiments. But I reckon there's going to be a big industry over the next couple of years. Lots of people are going to want to put little mini satellites in orbit or suborbital trajectories. They reckon around 18,500 small orbiters weighing less than 500 kilos are projected to be launched in the coming decade.
I'm going to go into the world of space junk again in just a moment. But before I do, how do you fancy a trip to the edge of space in a big balloon? This is really interesting now. This is luxury tourism type thing, the new luxury balloon tourism, Zapalto, Zapalto. It's a French startup. It has joined forces with the Centre de National d'Etudes Spatiales to offer balloon flights 25 kilometres into Earth's atmosphere. And if you want to do this, it's €121,000, and that's per flight, and you'll be seated in a pressurised capsule, which is to be hoisted up by a helium and hydrogen filled balloon. A helium and hydrogen. Hydrogen. That's a weird one. So whether there's an anti-sparking thing on that, I don't know. But included in the price will be a Michelin star dining experience with a minimalist interior designed by a fellow called Joseph Duran. And you'll have Wi-Fi so your pictures can be beamed back down and uploaded before you land. The flight, which are to start in 2025, which is not that far away, it's going to be good, will carry 6 passengers, 2 pilots, and lift off from the French spaceport. It's going to last 6 hours, 1.5 hours spent on the ascent, 3 hours dining on board. Now, mark my word, this is going to be fun, and you can enjoy the views with the final 1.5 hours spent on the descent. That'll be some trip, and I'm not sure whether it'll be brave enough to go on it yet, would you?
Maybe it would be. Would you do that or a rocket? I don't
know. I suppose when I was a little bit younger, I might have done that as well. Anyway, you'll reach an altitude of 25 kilometres, but you will not experience zero gravity, but you will see the Earth's curvature as 98% of the atmosphere will be below the craft. So it will be some experience. So they want to carry out 60 flights per year. So far, they've flown 3 test flights to a lower altitude, and which will offer the paying passengers. So it seems safe enough. And at some stage, they're going to reach 30.5 kilometres, and they'll land at sea as well. So you had money to spend.
That's the way to do it.
That'd
yeah,
be
that's
a surprise for if you wanted to take me up there for a little look around. And
there's also the Virgin Galactic option as well. They've announced that they're going to start a commercial space flight service. They only announced this last week. And the first commercial space flight will be called Galactic 01. It's planned to fly between June 27th and June 30th. That's later this month. And the second space flight, which, as you can imagine, is called Galactic 02, will follow in early August. And they plan monthly space flights thereafter. They're ready to fly the company's first customers to space, having successfully completed the Unity 25 space flight and subsequent routine analysis and vehicle inspections. Galactic 01 is a scientific research mission. We mentioned this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, John. It will carry three members of the Italian Air Force and the National Research Council of Italy to conduct microgravity research, and they'll have scientific payloads on board. And the space flight will showcase the value and power of the unique suborbital science lab that Virgin Galactic offers. Meanwhile, when they get to Galactic 02, that will bring Virgin Galactic's unique experience to private astronauts. That's planned for early August, as I mentioned, and monthly flights after that, as I also said. So they're getting back into the swing of things. I thought they were were they not near the edge of bankruptcy? Was that Virgin Galactic?
That was Virgin Galactic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, they now say they're off on their travels. If you want to find out more, book your ticket, get the information, go to their website, virgingalactic.com.
Now, slip back a long time ago, Ben, and Earth had only a 19-hour day for a billion years. This is going way, way back now. Although nowadays we have 24-hour day for granted, day length was shorter because the moon was closer at that particular time. Over time, the moon has stolen the Earth's rotation energy to boost it into a higher orbit far from the Earth. So that's why we did that. So a good while ago, I don't know exactly what date this happened or stopped. So how do the researchers measure ancient day length? In the past decades, geologists use records from special sedimentary rocks, preserving the very fine scale layering in tidal mudflats. And there's all sorts of ways to do this as well. So Earth's day appeared to have stopped its long increase and flatlined at about 19 hours, roughly between 2 to 1 billion years ago. Now we're talking a lot of time then at this stage. So there we go. So we are, I think we're slowing down. Is it by 1 second?
Do not adjust your watch, yes. Yeah. Yes. Alan's been on and confirming that the sidereal day is 23 hours, 56 minutes.
There you go.
And I think 4.25 seconds, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, this is, that's quite interesting.
Also, that's Virgin Galactic. Mm-hmm. I've also been involved, we were talking about it earlier. Mm-hmm. I know it's not an astronomical subject as such, but when you were talking about going up in the balloon up to the Kármán line or into the top of the atmosphere, that, I was reminded of the stricken soul, but down in the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
And, Alan says that Virgin Galactic are involved in the search. And I just check his text again.
Indeed, and just while we do that, China aims to make its first manned moon landing before 2030. So they plan to send astronauts to the moon before this, and that'll be really exciting to see. Now, is it the U.S. space race? Is it the Chinese space race? But I think the U.S. are still very keen on the moon race because they were there first, I suppose, and they want to keep it that way as well.
It's like a race the second time around, isn't it? Because it's more than 50 years, is it? Since the last Apollo.
Over 50 years.
Oh, yeah, 72 was the last Apollo landing.
Mm-hmm. So China actually questions whether there is a new moon race afoot. So we'll keep an eye on that to see what happens.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you, John. Just getting back to Alan, he says SpaceX reportedly ran the failed comms on the stricken Titanic sub.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. Didn't know that.
There you go. Now, just going back to space debris. Going back a number of years when we were around, that's almost 20 years ago now, Ben, this stage, we were having I was certainly doing it as well, and we were looking at the amount of space junk that was up there, and they were tracking at that stage 9,000 pieces of orbit debris, about 100 mil in diameter. Now they've crept up to 27,000 pieces of orbital debris, and these are tracked by the Department of Defense's Global Space Surveillance Network. How they keep an eye on this and how they dodge all this, it's just mind-boggling. So much more debris, too small to be tracked, of course, as well, but large enough to be threatening the human spaceflight and robotic missions, exists in near-Earth space. Now, there is a certain amount of loss as they get dragged back down through microgravity back into the surface, but they reckon at the moment 27,000 pieces, and if you count flecks of paint and everything, travelling at 15,700 miles per hour, there could be over 100,000 bits and pieces.
Well more than that, I'd say. And imagine just, if you're counting flecks of paint and lost toolkits.
We could go into the list of everything of what there. So if we remember in February the 10th, 2009, there was a defunct Russian spacecraft which collided and destroyed one of the US's functioning Iridium commercial spaceflight. So that added about 2,500 pieces of large trackable debris and more small debris into the inventory of space junk. So, and of course, the 2007, there's the Chinese anti-satellite test, which put another 3,500 pieces of large trackable debris. So it's just mind-boggling, the amount of stuff, and how they dodge all this, I just can't figure it out. And another 41 pieces went up in
that's true. For those pieces in low Earth orbit, though, they'll eventually come down, but the further out they are, the longer it'll take, or maybe never. Now, some good news on the old renewable energy front. We mentioned this sometime before about beaming energy down from space, and it has been done for the first time. Solar panels are more effective and more efficient beyond the Earth's atmosphere, but there are some work done by Caltech. That's those that place over in there in California, I believe. They have a Space Solar Power Project, or SSPP, and they launched a payload on board SpaceX's Transporter 6 mission on January, but they have managed to transmit power back to Earth. I can't have all the details here, but I don't have time to go into it, but there seems to be prospects then that you could use, especially in remote areas, once you have a receiver, you can basically pick up the energy that beam down from space without a cable, obviously.
And it's available all day. They don't have night time up there for things like that.
So once it's not in, chat, it would depend, where, if the receiver of the sunlight or the panel is in sunlight or not, but you can still beam the energy back down. It's not the most efficient at the moment, and there's a lot of work and research to be done on it yet, but it looks promising. Another win for the environment. If it's not too late to save the planet, that's another that's another day's work of it, saving the planet.
Yeah, and I've just come back. We just wanted to confirm the five planets that aligned on the 17th, which was the 20th, a few days back, were Saturn, Neptune, Jupiter, Uranus, and Mercury, although some of those were morning. You have to be up really early to get those as well. So they were the five planets which lined up. Not to be seen again in the same sort of site again until September the 8th in 2040-something. It's like 42, I think. So we let you know about that.
Okay.
Anyway, that's about it, Ben.
Thank you very much. Very, very briefly, I see scientists have detected phosphorus in the oceans, or the oceans, yes, on Enceladus. So now they seem to have, what they call the six light elements essential to every known organism, life as we know it, Jim, namely carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur. Now that's not to say that there is life in the oceans on Enceladus, but that's another
day.
It's another day, another possibility. All the ingredients are there, but we'll get to that again. That no doubt in a future program. But that's all the time we have this evening. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items. Thanks too to the people here who put the show out as a podcast. And you can also catch us live on the web at dublincityfm.ie. And to James Sweeney and for Conor Lennon for making the show available on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Pen Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Bren Linehan with Threads. And 11 p.m, it's Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And at midnight to 2 a.m, we have After Hours with Dave Barry and his mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.